When Cliven Bundy and his sons were in the headlines last year for the takeover of a remote eastern Oregon wildlife refuge, it might have been lost that the original dispute was over his cattle grazing on federal lands. While Bundy's camp has always maintained that the government charging and monitoring ranchers on public lands is federal overreach, one group in the Blue Mountains of Oregon is working in partnership, ranchers, government, and scientists, to research sustainable cattle grazing on federal lands. They think there are ways to keep agreements in place that promote land conservation while allowing for the financial success of small businesses. Susan Charnley is a research social scientist with the USDA Forest Service at the Pacific Northwest Research Station in Oregon, and she heads up the Blue Mountains Working Group. I spoke with her more about her work.
So a couple of years ago, I started doing research with some colleagues on public lands grazing on three national forests in the Blue Mountains of eastern Oregon. The idea was to just essentially increase the information base about the nature of grazing on national forest lands. So that includes who are the permittees, how many livestock do they run, how do they manage grazing on the national forests on their allotments, what's the importance of access to national forest lands for grazing purposes. And so then the question is, when they're on those national forest lands, how are they managing grazing? Is it helping them with their financial viability? And how does the National Forest System Grazing Program contribute to the sustainability of ranching in rural communities out in that area?
So livestock grazing, there has been a dominant use of the land in the Blue Mountains, right, since the late 1800s. So what effect has it had on the land overall?
I mean, this area out in the Blue Mountains historically had some of the best grazing in the western U.S., but in the late 1800s and early 1900s, I would say that a lot of people came in with sheep and with cattle, and there was somewhat extensive overgrazing. Once the National Forest System was established in 1905, they started to try and get a handle on some of that grazing, but I would say it was several decades probably before they really tried to regulate it in a manner that reduced the negative impacts. And the grazing program over time has evolved. I think in the 1980s, for example, there were also efforts to really cut down on the number of livestock that were out on the national forests. Today, you know, you have a system whereby they've really tried to make an effort to keep a sustainable level of livestock on the allotments and to do monitoring to try and ensure that they're not having a negative impact.
So there is a way to sustainably, like you say, allow ranchers to have their cattle grazed there like they have for hundreds of years.
Oh, sure. I mean, to me, the impact of grazing on the landscape is really a question of how are you managing the animals out there. You know, I've seen grazing management on public lands in places, you know, where it was initially detrimental, but then when they changed what they were doing, you had a lot of rangeland recovery, and you had the recovery of riparian areas as well. So you can certainly manage grazing in ways that are not negative.
But these have generally been controversial over the years. How do they navigate these sorts of public land agreements that allow for that sort of balance like you're describing?
So permits to graze on national forest lands are associated with what you call a base property, or else they're associated with a herd of livestock that has been permitted to graze on the national forest land. And so you either inherit the livestock and or the base property, or you purchase it. And then when you, if you purchase it from somebody, then the previous owner has to relinquish their permit, and then it goes to the new owner. So that's how you get access to grazing on the national forest lands. Mm-hmm. And then once you do that, most permittees have a permit that lasts for 10 years, and then the Forest Service is supposed to undergo a National Environmental Policy Act analysis before the permit gets renewed, how many animals you should have out there, when they should go on, when they should come off, how they're going to move from pasture to pasture, all that kind of thing gets negotiated. But the permittee also meets with the range manager of the Forest Service on an annual basis, and they talk about how they're going to manage grazing for the upcoming year. It's in consultation with mm-hmm. the Forest Service program managers.
So as you're conducting this research and looking forward, what is it that you hope to be able to communicate about what's going on in terms of not only these agreements, but in terms of long-term grazing on these public lands?
I guess what I think is that working landscapes are important. Working landscapes can help sustain the livelihoods of people who are dependent on activities like grazing. They also offer a lot of environmental values. I mean, I think today you can't just have conservation inside of protected areas. So, for example, inside federally designated national forest or national park lands, but we also need to promote conservation on private lands. So, for example, if you didn't have grazing on the national forest, it would pose great difficulty from a financial standpoint for a lot of these ranchers. And so if they happen to sell out, go out of business, well, we've seen this happen certainly in other parts of the West. You know, you get land starts getting subdivided, it starts getting developed. You lose a lot of those open space and conservation values that people care about. You know, private and public land grazing in many cases is interdependent and one supports the other.
Okay. Susan Charnley, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.